Blog Talk Radio.
Because we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one.
Hello, everyone. My name is Matt Weston, and you're listening to Battle Red Radio. And tonight I'm joined by the biggest, fattest, strongest one of all, BFD. Hey, how's it going?
Houston Oilers, Houston Oilers, Houston Oilers number one, ba-da-bum-bum.
Well, BFD, did you know that Kanye West is better than John Steinbeck?
I honestly and can say that no, I did not know that. Thank you for dropping the wisdom.
Yeah, my favorite band, they came out with a single for their new CD that's coming out in October, and that's one of the lines in the song that Kanye. I like Kanye West. He's really great. I think he's better than John Steinbeck, and so the song's in my head all day. So that's where that came from. You haven't listened to Joyce Maynard, that you really should, because they write albums that are 20 minutes long, and you can get in and out of there real quick. And it's real fast, fun punk rock. But anyways, aside from that, we're going to talk about the Jacksonville Jaguars and start previewing the AFC South tonight on Battle Red Radio. The plan is to do this until the season starts. And so as far as the order goes, we're just going to go in the order of Football Outsiders win projections. And so first up is Jacksonville, and they have a projection of 6.9 wins for the season. And so with Jacksonville, last year they won 5 games, and every year – there's one or two teams that go from very bad to making the playoffs. And the Jaguars are trying to be one of those teams this year. You know, they have a young quarterback. They have an overhauled, you know, they have an overhauled defense. And with me, whenever I start looking at the team's record the next year, the first thing I kind of look at are those lucky stats, if there's any chance for any regression the following year. And so with Jacksonville, there's kind of two indicators there. The first is that their turnover differential last year was negative 10, which was 29th in the NFL. And the second is that they won 1.4 games less than expected, according to difference between their Pythagorean win total and their actual record, which was 29th in the NFL. And they were also 29th in turnover differential as well, too, like I mentioned. But at the same time, though, they had the 28th easiest schedule last year as well, too. And their turnover differential was so bad because, one, Bortles turns the ball over a lot, and, two, their defense, you know, there's just a lack of talent on it, too. And so even though despite these two kind of indicators, there really isn't, you know, strong, you know, history or strong statistical signal that the Jaguars are a team they're looking who had, you know, faced a lot of bad luck last year, who are going to make the leap this year by any means, aside from their offseason, except for the offseason that they had this year. So even though they were their 5-win team last year, they may have been about a 6-win team last year instead, but it's still like a big difference between the 9 or 10 wins takes to make the playoffs. So first question for you, BFD, do you think Jacksonville, even their what they did last year, is there anything that you can really build off of, think of it, to project to their season this year at all?
I think being healthy is a big start, but excuse me. But I think one thing that we can look at is they actually had an effective, you know, free agency signing season, and that's one thing. You know, not a lot of teams are able to go sign guys that can immediately step in and help in free agency at this point. Excuse me. You know, oftentimes you're signing, you know, old dudes, you know, over the hill dudes, and that wasn't the case for them. So they signed of course, the big signing was Malik Jackson from Denver. He's somebody who I've been, you know, man-crushing on a couple of years now, and that is a big difference maker for that team. But they also got a couple of guys who flew under the radar a little bit more. You got Princeton McNamara, cornerback, and then, of course, Tayshaun Gibson to play center field for them. Those are two pretty fine cornerbacks that are going to be a major upgrade on talent. Where they got burned last year, especially against DeAndre Hopkins, was those cornerbacks are weak. And then all of a sudden, Davon House started playing well at the end of the year. So, oh, and of course, the big one, and there's a question about him in the comments already, Dante Fowler is healthy. So you've already, when you start to look at who they drafted and who they got back, they have major upgrades at 5 positions defensively, and that's a lot to build on. Offensively, they replaced Luke Yokel at left tackle with Kelvin Beachum, another free agent signing, who's a very, very good football player. So you look across this team, you can point to 6 or 7 upgrades and say, this is what makes them better than they were in 2015.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we'll start talking about the defense then. Their defensive numbers last year, they had a third first-ranked pass defense. They were 24th in just sack rate, 30th in pressure rate, 17th in rushing defense, and they were 26th overall in defensive DVOA. And, I mean, their issue is just, one, they couldn't rush the passer, which didn't help their secondary out. And also, their secondary, you know, starred bad players. You know, Jonathan Cyprian can't tackle. Aaron Colvin isn't, you know, all that great. You know, Devon House, he played fine as long as he wasn't playing against DeAndre Hopkins. But it's one of those things where you don't know if it's the chicken or the egg. If it was the pass rush fault, where your best pass rusher is Chris Clemens, who retired this year, or if it was their secondary. But the reason why they were so bad last year was their pass defense. And so this year, like you said, they revamped this defense. They have Malik Jackson, Prince Mukamara, who's slated to play their slot cornerback position. Dante Fowler, who's going to play that weak side defensive end Leo role, where he's just going to help out backside runs, try to force things inside, and just rush the passer. Well, Jalen Ramsey, they're looking to put him at their second cornerback position. Tayshawn Gibson at free safety. Miles Jack can play a lot of different positions. He'll play middle linebacker, especially on nickel downs. And those are all, you know, guys who can start on this defense, and that's, you know, six potential new starters from a defense that was 26th in DVOA last year. And also, with all that addition, you're having a lot of sub-replacement-level players who aren't going to play 60% of snaps anymore. And across the board, this entire defense has, you know, huge improvements. So do you think this talent people BFD is going to involve them into one of the better defenses in the league as a whole?
I don't know about better. And, you know, that's two guys we didn't talk about. I didn't talk about Jalen Ramsey and Miles Jack on purpose. You know, those are two more guys, two more young guys. So when you talk about replacement-level type talent, you've got a lot of young dudes who are suddenly going to be starting and making an impact. Fowler, Jackson, Miles Jack, Telvin Smith, Ramsey.
And they drafted six defensive players this year, too. And I know two of them were guys who had a lot of sacks in college. One of them was from Maryland. The other one's from Central Arkansas. I think combined they had 50 sacks in college. So they also got some kind of pass rushers. And the Jags are one of the more analytical teams in the league, so maybe they found some diamonds are up there too. But, yeah, they use, I think, seven or eight defensive draft picks on – or six or of their draft picks on defensive players. And the only offense player they took was a backup quarterback. So there's even, like, kind of like new third-round, fourth-round, fifth-round picks too that they use on those positions too.
Yeah, you've got Yannick Ngakoue. I think that's how you pronounce it. He's another guy who's been lighting it up in camp, and he's been getting a lot of press to go along with Dante Fowler, who everybody's drooling over. So, yeah, there's a lot of reason to actually be optimistic. So what does that mean for them in 2016? You know, I think that you go from – and just double-checking here. I think they were the 26th by defense. Is that correct?
Yeah, 26th by DVOA.
Oh, there we go. Okay. So, you know, what does that make them? What does six position upgrades make them? And I think realistically, that makes them about an average defense at this point in time, considering the age of the talent. You got a lot of guys in the first and second years. You've got some guys who are older guys, but they're phasing them out. I think realistically, 15th, 16th in DVOA is possible.
Yeah, I would say that's probably their like kind of their max with what they have right now, just because there's a lot of young guys here still too. Do you see any potential holes on this defense at all?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that even with all their upgrades in the back level linebacker and defensive back position, I think it's still fair. And then, you know, the biggest, you know, the guy in the center of the defense, Paul Poliznyi, is not a good football player at this point. But Dante Fowler and Malik Jackson definitely make the line better, but we're still counting on Sanderic Marks to be healthy. Roy Miller to be alive, Jared Odrick, one of the absolute worst picks in NFL history, Tyson Alualu, who I don't even know how he still has a job. Once you get past
he's
Fowler.
He's like Michael Jackson. Griffin.
Yeah.
How he while being terrible.
But so once you get outside of Fowler and Jackson, it's shit. I mean, their defensive line is shit. And then Paul Poliznyi is not a good middle linebacker. So, you know, if I'm an opponent, I think I can run the ball down their throats with effectiveness.
Yeah, and I mean, their best kind of strength on their team last year was run defense. They were 17th in DVOA, which is, you know, fine, but I think part of the reason, I know there's no raw totals involved in that, and I think part of it also is that they're running the ball at the end of the game to just run the clock out, and DVOA doesn't take into account those. It takes account, you know, down and distance and efficiency and how many, you know, 3 yards is more important on third and two than it is on first and 10. So that's probably one of the reasons why that DVOA was higher. And I think also, I think you touched on something with that too, was that their line outside, they have Jackson, Fowler, those are going to be the two main guys. But I think Roy Miller is pretty good. He's going to play the zero technique. They run that 4-3 under and over. And what you kind of touched on, that their front seven is really important for this defense. They run the bare front. They do the same thing Sal does. And so I guess the whole idea is that the two-gap defensive ends can be Odrick. Roy Miller is going to be the zero technique. Malik Jackson and Sean Derrick Marks are going to play that three technique where you're just trying to penetrate the gap. And then Fowler is going to play Leo, trying to, you know, rush the passer as much as possible. And then Skuda is playing that strong side linebacker position around the line. And then you have Pozlemski in the middle and Smith as weak side linebackers, how their 4-3 is going to shape up. And I think that's a pretty good front seven. I think it's good enough to be, you know, above average. The two holes I see, though, is just kind of in the secondary with, you don't know how good Ramsey's going to adjust to playing cornerback in the NFL. I would have rather seen him play, you know, strong safety. And then also just their safety play. Jonathan Cyprian, that strong safety plays in the box a lot, and he's there to pick up trash and make tackles unblocked. And he was the worst tackler in the NFL last year, according to Charting Stats. And the other is, you know, Gibson's a good player, but he played a lot of half the field. And so he played a lot of half the field and having to really cover guys. And in Seattle, he's going to have to cover that whole middle third. And with that, you know, kind of difference, there's a lot more importance on Gibson. And so how he reacts is kind of be the biggest thing. But the two biggest holes I see are just at safety. Can Gibson make that transition playing more cover three? And then can Cyprian actually learn how to tackle somebody and be able to make plays in the box too?
Yeah, I think the answer to that last one is no. I think you yeah. know how to tackle, or you're not going to learn at this point.
And what, is this fourth year in the league this year too, I think, or third?
Yes.
I think he came with Bortles, so.
I'm checking. He's a 2013 second rounder, so yeah.
Okay. Came with Bortles. So this is his third year. So, and I guess the kind of other aspect of this defense, well, before we get to that, what player are you most excited to watch on this team? I know you love Malik Jackson. Is he the guy that you're excited for, or is it somebody else on this defense that you're looking forward to this season watching?
I think I'm going to go for the shiny object, and that's going to be Jalen Ramsey. Just, you know, he's a guy who can play cornerback or safety. It's going to be interesting to see how they utilize his talents. Is he going to be a better player with his ball back, or with his back to the quarterback, or his chest to the quarterback kind of guy? And so I'm really looking forward to seeing how they're going to use him and his athleticism and what his learning curve is going to be. You know, it's important to understand that cornerbacks like Kareem Jackson, who come into the league and get toasted the first and second year, they're the rule, not the exception. And so what's going to happen with Jalen Ramsey? That'll be fun.
Yeah. And I'm like you said, I'm really excited to see how they use him, because he was kind of like, he was looked at as like a generational sort of defensive back player. We can play both safety and corner, and not many guys can really do that at all. I was kind of hoping they're going to use him mostly in the box at strong safety and let him play like a lot of, you know, robber zone coverage, and be able to just like let him react and make plays on the ball and tackle and blitz and all that. And right now they have him slot as cornerback number two. But what they're doing preseason, just getting him reps and getting him how to coverage, is not necessarily how they're actually going to use him whenever the season starts. The guy I'm really looking forward to watch is probably Dante Fowler. I've saw the, you know, Jaguar Twitter vines and all that of him just, you know, destroying guys. And everything that you read about has just had nothing but great things. And he's going against a bad offensive line every single day in practice. But, I mean, he's just, you know, demolishing guys. And not having him played all last year was a bummer. And that position that with Jacksonville, you know, he needs to have 12 sacks for that defense to be effective. And they haven't had any good talent off that Leo position. So I'm excited to watch him there a lot. And then I guess going back to that too, what I'm also really looking forward to about this defense is just the versatility. Where Miles Jack can play, you know, nickel linebacker, he can play middle linebacker, he can play weak side linebacker. Malik Jackson can play that, you know, big two gap defensive end position. He can play the three technique and penetrate. And also whenever you pass rush too, you have four guys, you can put a bunch of different spots. And so the versatility in the front seven is everything I'm really excited to watch with this defense too as well.
Yep. It's going to be, you know, a lot of people talk trash in the offseason. No, Jacksonville really hasn't gotten better. But I think when you can point to a team and say, hey, we've got 5-6 major upgrades on the defensive roster from the end of last year, that's significant. That is, you know, creating a difference maker. And that allows, as I see your next question, that allows Gus Bradley to implement the kind of systems he wants to implement.
Yeah, and I think he's the other kind of big question mark here on this defense. I mean, probably the biggest question mark because the talent's there now. For the last 3 years, he's been the head coach. The Jaguars are 12-36, and they all, you know, he was the head coach during this time these last 3 years. And the best defense that they have was 2014, when they the 20th best defense according to DVOA. And so in this age of the NFL, there's always quick fires, there's short leashes. You know, coaches who are this miserable, they're usually fired after, you know, 2 years. He doesn't get the third year. He doesn't even get the fourth year. And so they have him. They stuck with him. And so there's a big difference between gaining experience, having stability, letting somebody learn, and then just completely wasting your life. Why do you think the Jaguars have stuck with him for this long?
I don't know. Is it partly the Rick Smith syndrome? Is like, you know, Gus Bradley is okay enough to keep his job, and we're just not going to bother going out and trying to find somebody who's better because, well, he knows how to get to the stadium, right? That's a plus. And for the record, UT, that is my dog. Oh, God, I should probably clarify that first. In a different room, that is a dog playing on the carpet and rubbing his belly. The porn, I've already muted the porn. The Filipino training porn is playing on another window on my computer.
Hey, you can send me that link later, right?
You wish. I don't want you hogging my bandwidth. I think part of the reason he's kept his job is because of purely the reason that how can you implement a system when you don't have the personnel to do it? And I think if you look back on what Gus Bradley inherited, is he inherited a really crappy, athletically challenged, poor defensive squad. And so when you have, there's one thing that you coach to what you have, you make adjustments to what you have, and there's another thing that you implement your system with the talent you've got. But when you had the Jacksonville Jaguars of 2012, 2013, it doesn't matter what defense you run, you're going to suck. And so I think that's kind of you can use that logic and you can use it well with Gus Bradley. What was he supposed to do? I mean, was he supposed to run with absolute shit? And so you can justify Khan keeping him around because now finally he's got some real talent on the defensive side of the ball. He can run cover three. He has his center fielder. Now are the Glitter Kitties going to be able to run it to the same level the Seattle Seahawks have? And the answer is well, probably not yet. But at least it's not just going to be a flat-out embarrassment out there. So that would be my opinion, is that if you hand a team to a guy and you've got – there are 32 teams in the NFL and the Jacksonville Jaguars don't even have the talents of Alabama and UT on their roster, then I don't know how you're supposed to do something with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't miss the argument for him completely. You know, 2013 when he took over the team – Tyson Alualu starts 16 games. Jason Babin starts 16 games. Sean Aaron Marks is really good. He starts 16 games. But also, Pozlanski starts 15. Cyprian starts 15. Alan Ball was their starting cornerback that year. Geno Hayes was their starting linebacker. Russell Allen, who that was, started 13 games. Josh Evans started 11. Will Blackman, Dwayne Gratz split time at the other corner position. You know, they just didn't have the talent on defense there, you know, during that time. But that's kind of how it is this year, though. Like, this is his time to either succeed or he's going to be fired if he doesn't have the record this year. The one thing with Bradley I'm kind of nervous about, though, is I don't think there's a case that he's a good coach. Like, that's just kind of the case of why they stuck with him, why they haven't done anything, you know, as far as firing. It's just personnel, and they used a lot of their draft capital on offensive players, you know, during that time period. But in Seattle, now that's Pete Carroll's defense. You know, Pete Carroll learned the 4-3 under and over while coaching for Monte Kiffin. He came up with the idea of using that cover three and getting those faster cornerbacks, especially when they drafted Earl Thomas, to make that ability to break on the ball and cover that whole part of the field like how he does. And he was the one who molded that whole defense and came up with the idea for it. That's the defense he wanted to run at USC, but they weren't able to because of the skill of the players available and also the amount of time they could practice football, where he was never able to actually run it. And whenever he got to Seattle, he kind of took this thing that he's been crafting for, you know, 20 years and was able to turn into one of the top 10 best defenses of all time. And so, Bradley had a part in it, you know, game plan, that sort of thing. But it was Carroll's defense, and Bradley called the plays. And then he learned those principles that he brought to Jacksonville. The difference is, though, is that it's not something I don't think he created. It's also getting the personnel to fit that scheme, too. And so if they actually got the personnel fit the scheme for this defense, yeah, I think Bradley should be able to be fine with it. But I don't think he's shown anything that shows that he's a good coach. It's kind of, well, let's see what he can actually do this year now that he has the talent, and hopefully the talent fits the scheme that he wants to run this year.
Yeah, and I'll fully agree that that there's nothing on Gus Bradley's resume as of today, right now, that says he will be a good NFL head coach. There's nothing.
Yeah, and I mean, I think going back to him also, the only coach I can think of who had as such a bad career to start off and not get fired was Ron Rivera in Carolina. And that ended up working out. But, you know, they took Newton. It took him some time to grow. They used a lot of their draft capital and defensive players to fix that side of the ball. Keekly was incredible. You know, Thomas Davis got healthy, and they were able to get some really great defensive linemen for, you know, later in the draft, too. And it all kind of came together. But the difference, I think, with Carolina was that they couldn't win one possession games their entire time he was there. They were in games. They played well. You know, Cam Newton showed growth every single year, and they just could not win these one possession games. I think they were like 5-17. I know Bill Barmer wrote a bunch of articles on it. It was their one possession record during his first 3 years. And then in 2013, that season was whenever that all changed, and they lost in the playoffs to the San Francisco 49ers. But they made the playoffs, won the division, and they won it the last, you know, they won the last 2 years and missed in 14 or whatever. But there was a reason why that they were bad. Like, they showed some sort of bad luck, and there was kind of reasons why you would stick with them because they were in games. The Jaguars aren't like that at all. They've just been bad for these last 3 years. And so those are just kind of – there's a similar situation, but it's not similar a lot of ways too.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, is there anything else you want to add defensively at all when it comes to Jaguars?
No, I think we touched on all of our talking points. Awesome.
Okay. Well, offensively, they were actually fun. They scored 376 points last year. They threw the ball downfield a lot. And the main reason why is that they were down by so much early, there's nothing else they can do aside, you know, throw the ball as far downfield as possible to Hearns and Robertson. But at least they try to, you know, come back, and they fought and, you know, did something instead of just run the clock out a lot and kind of end the game. But the main reason for this resurgence was Allen Hearns and Allen Robinson. These two combined for 144 catches, 2,431 yards, and 24 touchdowns. And Hearns was kind of more the steady first down getter, and Robinson was more the deep threat. I know, like, actually, I don't know off the top of my head. I won't say anything. I don't know exactly. But with these two guys, do you think last year was a fluke, or did they make the leap? And if you think they made the leap, can you name a better wide receiver combo in the league other than these two?
I think as far as whether it's a fluke, I think the answer is both yes and no, because the fact is that, you know, Jacksonville had, I think, led the league in explosive plays of 20 more yards, or were up there at the top. And that is, there is a certain degree of fluky to that. That is not necessarily a statistically sustainable event. But on the other hand, you can look at it and go, well, hey, at least they got 80 whatever plays of 20 or more yards. So, you know, that's a thing. That's a thing you can actually say and point to and say, hey, that's pretty dadgum good. And so I think it's a little of each. So if they're able to continue the explosive plays, then that could set the stage for a true increase of offensive performance. Blake Bortles has all his warts. You know, he throws too many interceptions. He takes too many sacks. We know this. But these are also events that can be learned. These are learned behaviors. If you're Jonathan Cyprian and you can't tackle your third year in the league, your fourth year in the league, you suck. You're not going to tackle. If you're Blake Bortles coming out of a spread offense at UCF, and you've shown tremendous improvement from year one to year two, well, then you might be, you know, our kids is learning today. So I see that in Bortles, that there is actually a growth curve there. And let's just be honest here, Blake Bortles is that entire team. So how that team performs, or how Blake Bortles performs, is how the team performs. And I think you can point to them and say, you know what, there's upside here. It's not a whole lot of crap anymore.
Yeah, do you like Bortles? Do you think he's kind of locked in as a starting NFL quarterback?
I do. I liking Bortles, it's a tough question. I do think he's locked in as an NFL caliber starting quarterback, even though today he is below average. I mean, I think he still has a leap to make to become average. Mm-hmm. But if you, for the people that really despised him coming out of the 2014 draft, you know, he was never going to be a good quarterback at all. He was too robotic, too tight in the hips, didn't have the moves, didn't have the arm, whatever. I mean, there's a lot of justifications why he was never going to be a good NFL starting quarterback. And now at least you can point to him and say, you know, I see improvement. I see things changing. And so do I like him? I think he's a lot of fun to watch. I really do, because it's sort of like watching, you know, people play chicken, right? It's you're going to get those exciting times when something explodes, and that's what it's kind of like with Blake. But it's also, you know, he's going to throw up chunks of ball to Allen Robinson and Alan Hearns, and they probably are the best, at least in the top two or three, best wide receiver combos in the NFL today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, what I like about Bortles is that he throws the ball downfield. And I think it's kind of like it's one of those plays that people don't really use as much as, you know, anymore. People play a lot more conservatively, and it's just such a big deal whenever you can get 30 yards in chunk like that, because that's 3 points most of the time, you know, on average for your field position. And so with him, like, he throws the ball downfield and doesn't really, you know, care all that much. And a lot of it's, you know, being down late, but I also like his mobility. I like his arm strength, and his pocket presence needs work. And the fact is he gets blindsided too many times, but he's good at escaping the pocket whenever he needs to. He sits in there pretty well. But I also like him with, you know, Hearns and Robinson, just the way that they accentuate his strengths, where Bortles wants to get the ball downfield, and all he has to do is get close enough to these guys. Most of these quarterbacks throw the ball deep. They're going to overthrow just so that they, you know, don't throw an interception. But Bortles tries to get the ball close, and he's good doing that. And these two guys are able to go up there and get it and jump over cornerbacks and make plays on the ball, kind of like with DeAndre Hopkins, where you just have to put it in play down the sideline. He's probably going to make that catch. And so both of those guys kind of accentuate, you know, his biggest strength, which is his downfield accuracy. But the one thing about Bortles is that he just has two, you know, big warts on him. The first is inaccuracy. He has yet to complete more than 60% of his passes. And this isn't a case of him just throwing the ball deep all the time. I mean, he misses a lot of easy open throws, just, you know, throws where guys are wide open, where he leads them too far out bounds, or he, you know, drops a foot before. And also part of that kind of goes to decision-making too, where he attempts throws in the triple covers that get back down that he should not even attempt. And the other is also that kind of Geno Smith gene, where he just has that dinosaur brain where he makes just three just incredibly stupid plays a game. Where I think if you could watch, you know, Blake Bortles or Geno Smith film and get rid of 3% of just the completely just idiotic, you know, repulsive plays and watch the other 97%, he's like, wow, this guy's above average quarterback. You know, the patience is there, the anticipation's there, the arm strength is, you know, the ability to feel the rush, the ability to make changes to the line, you know, all that's there, but they just make these just really stupid plays, and you just save all those vines and gifts of, you know, Bortles running 7 yards to the line of scrimmage and trying to throw touchdowns and that sort of thing. But statistically, he threw 18 interceptions, and he lost the level league in the adjusted interceptions too, which adds dropped interceptions as well as sack. And he was sacked 51 times, and he fumbled the ball 14 times. And so do you see Bortles improving on either these two inaccuracies or these two, you know, kind of problems that he has? Or do you think his strengths, as he improves on these traits, do you think they can make up for these kind of two holes in this game?
The problem with being inaccurate is that's really the biggest thing to overcome at the NFL level. I mean, we've seen it for years. Really, Kyle Fuller, I consider to be the poster child for guys that have every possible skill, but they couldn't draw the arm that they have to.
Like
so
Ryan
Mallett? Ryan Mallett didn't have it between the ears.
I just think it was his accuracy.
Yeah, it's bad, yeah. But yeah, Bortles needs to take those next steps. You know, and let's look at it realistically. You know, Bortles threw, I don't know off the top of my head, he had about 400, you know, throws. And so the difference between 55% and 60% is, what, 12 catches? 12 receptions? So we're not talking he needs to make a huge, huge, huge leap here. What he needs to do is he needs to complete 1-2 passes more a game, and all of a sudden that completion percentage crosses that, you know, 60% kind of magic mark. You know, obviously, we, you know, as an NFL quarterback, you'd like to see that a lot closer to 60%. 5%, 66%, but still, you know, over the course of a season, that's not embarrassing. And that's what he needs to stop being, is embarrassing with these Sterling. But it is the most difficult thing. I think, aside from picking up the mental aspect of the game, it is the most difficult thing for a quarterback to increase. Also, when we're talking about his targets, I am a big fan of Julius Thomas. And so he was not healthy at all last year. He never looked good. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be healthy this year. And so I think that also will help Bortles quite a bit, is he's going to have a lot more of a, you know, with Robinson and Hearns, you've got two deep guys, but you don't have that underneath guy that can really hurt you. Now, they have Brian Walters, who was effective, and I think there's a lot to like about Rashad Green, but Julius Thomas is a guy who can really help as an underneath guy, has that emergency guy, and so a healthy Julius Thomas might be enough by himself to kick that completion percentage up a couple of notches.
Yeah, and just help with those shorter throws, because you have, you know, Hearns is kind of outside catching those 12-yard routes, those curls, those ins, those outs. And they have Robinson running those deeper routes too, but they didn't have anybody who could really attack them in the field, and Thomas should be able to do that. And you're right about him last year. That first game he came back against Houston, the athleticism was there, but they just weren't – he was running the wrong routes. Bortles didn't know what he was doing. And he threw the ball to him a lot, but just nothing really came out of it because they were on the same page. And then throughout the years, it's kind of an issue. And you know, even last year, in kind of a bad season for Julius, he still caught 7 touchdowns. And that's half as many as he caught in Denver. He caught 14 for Denver in 2014 and 14 2013. And, you know, he's going to be, you know, his big red zone target as well there too. So I do think that should be able to help him as well. You know, I and my thing about Bortles too, the one thing I kind of wish he played more for his team like Tennessee or St. Louis with a really good run game, where they're just going to kind of try to grind out game some on the ground. You know, they're going to run the ball 25 times or so. And the passing game is not necessarily the focus point. It's more there to take shots deep and pick up a lot of yards at a time, kind of like what Flacco did with Baltimore whenever he was successful. And so I would like Bortles more in that situation where he throws the ball 20 times a game instead of 40 times, or 25 instead of 40, and he's there mostly to take shots deep and make, you know, really easy throws. Like, I think he would be perfect in, you know, Kubiak's offense, for example, where he's out of the pocket a lot, he's on the run, he's moving, everything's based off the run game, and he just has to hit some big throws here and there. And so I wish he was playing in more situation like that, unlike what he kind of the situation he's in Jacksonville, where he has to throw the ball 40 times a game for them to be successful, and he has to hit Robinson, he has to hit Hearns, and you know, he's going to have to need Thompson to help out, or Thomas to help out in the middle of the field too as well.
Yep, agree.
And, you know, going back to his grind out style too, the Jags just can't play that way. Last year they were 28th in rushing DVOA, and to fix this, they signed a running back who's kind of already hit that 26-year-old age mark where it's kind of past his peak, and they signed Chris Ivory for 5 years, $32 million. And he can't make guys miss, but he can run through them. And he's just not efficient also. Yeah, he ran for a lot of touchdowns, and he's a pretty good red zone back, but he just doesn't have that, you know, burst. And it's kind of like what you saw Marion Barber. He reminds me a lot of him. And once Barber's speed went down a little bit, he just couldn't play anymore because he lacked that explosiveness. And I could see the same thing happen to Ivory too as well. And then their offensive line plan, you mentioned about, you know, Beachum as well, and may move in Joku Lagarde, but their idea is to take these 8 pretty much below average mediocre offensive linemen and let them battle it out and run a complete competition, just pick the 5 best guys to make their offensive line. And so just based on those two factors, you know, the guy that they signed in Ivory, Akon Yeldon is the guy who would be really good behind a good offensive line, but just doesn't have that ability to make guys miss. Is more of like a straight line runner who can hit the hole and run forward. And the offensive line is not going to be good this year. I can't see this running attack being any good. What are your thoughts as far as them like grinding out at all and being able to have any success at all in the ground game?
Well, I think let's look at their offensive line. So you've got Beachum on the left, signed from Pittsburgh as a free agent. I think he is a above average left tackle when he's healthy. Jokel is a huge question mark. At left guard, who knows what the hell he's going to do moving from left tackle. I mean, it's not
I don't think he can play guard at all.
I question it. I do. I would have moved him to right tackle.
Yeah.
And his backup at left guard, by the way, is Mackenzie Bernadeau. So that's we're getting to LOL territory on the talent there. But the center,
he's probably
going to
start also.
Jokel?
No, Bernadeau is probably going to start right guard for him.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That's terrible. Well, I've got A.J. McCann at right guard. I think he's top of the depth chart right now. And then Jeremy Parnell at right tackle. You know, when you're talking your center through right tackle are all just crap. It's hard to run. You can't run. Build a team from the inside out. You want to run the ball, get an offensive line. You want to stop the run, get a defensive line. This isn't rocket science. And the Jaguars have done such a poor job addressing those positions that when you ask the question, can they do it? I think if they ran left a whole lot, they would have at least some measure of success. But running to the center, running to the right, they just might as well put up a brick wall over there because that ain't going to work.
Yeah, and that's why I hate that Chris Ivory signing so much also. It's that not only is his age, you don't want to pay a running back that much money, but that's a lot of money you can go out and get good guards. You can get you can fix your kind of guard and center situation kind of immediately with $32 million like that. And instead, they sign a running back who probably isn't going to be that good for maybe even past next year, and they're going to be stuck with him for that long. And so I really hate the Chris Ivory signing.
Yeah, and then you drafted T.J. Yeldon. I mean, I get it. I get Chris Ivory for a couple of reasons. But now you're talking about Ivory getting more than half of the carries instead of T.J. Yeldon? That's kind of silly. Why do you have this guy who is going to put up comparable numbers, the younger guy who's got more wiggle and more explosiveness, and you're going to sit him?
Mm-hmm.
So very, very questionable decisions there.
And, I mean, also the idea, too, is that, well, now they can use him in the red zone, but they're paying Julius Thomas, more than $10 million a year to be that red zone threat. And so it's not that hard to find a guy who can get 2 yards on the ground whenever you need to. You have to spend about $6 million a year for that to happen. And so I really don't like that sign. I think that was kind of the dumbest thing they did this offseason. And you'd rather have them improve at guard and center. And you already have players who are good in the red zone too, to begin with. You guys, you can get for a lot cheaper as well. And so I don't like paying $6 million a year for a running back, let alone a guy who is going to have problems getting older, who doesn't make anybody miss, who has to run through tackles, which probably would lead to injuries sooner than other players. And also, you already, like I said, you already have red zone guys there too. And so I think that was just a really big mistake that's going to have a big ripple effect throughout their run game this season too.
I mean, well, who would you rather have on your squad at this point of their career? Would you rather have an Evan Mathis or do you want Chris Ivory? And so that's the sort of weighing that you're doing when you sign Chris Ivory to a contract like that is, I'm not getting that incremental of an upgrade at my running back position by signing him, if at all, over Yeldon. But, man, mm-hmm. Evan Mathis, top 5 guard over, either guard that's starting for them is a tremendous upgrade in both cases. So that's poor management.
And I'm going to try to get Brian Schwenke from Tennessee, too. I really liked him as well from Tennessee. But, yeah, that's kind of all I have is offensive-wise. I don't really have any quick hitting questions at all. But, is there anything else on the offense side of the ball you want to talk about?
There was. Marquise Lee is a huge wild card for the team. Huge, huge wild card for the team. He's talented, clearly, but he stays on the field about as well as Clowney does. And so that is a big deal. Again, number one position an athlete can have, or number one skill an athlete can have is to be healthy. And Lee can't do that. Lee adds a legit fourth weapon to the receiving core if he's healthy. That takes pressure off Robinson and Hearns. So that's the sort of important position that he can take, especially on third downs, with that team. If he's healthy, that's going to be important for them. If he's going to continue to be hurt, and he's hurt already in camp, then there's no reason to ever think he's going to be healthy and get more than 8 games a year in, then, that's a huge loss, missed opportunity. I think he was a second-round pick. So that's another flush-down-the-toilet pick for the Glitter Kitties.
Yeah, it was a second-round pick. Alan Hearns was a UDFA that year, too. And last year, talking about his health, in 2014, he started 8 games, playing 13. In 2015, he started 1 game, played in 10. And last year, he caught 15 passes on He caught 15 passes on 32 attempts for 191 yards, a catch rate of 47%, and he had 1 touchdown. But I'm kind of more excited for Rashad Green in that slot receiver role because that guy can fly, and he was the best kick returner in the AFC South last year, one of the best kick returners in the league. And I mean, that guy is so fast. And so if he ever learns how to run routes with any sort of consistency and, you know, catch the ball, you know, sprout from his body more, he would be, you know, kind of an incredible slot corner and just adding a whole nother dimension of speed. And so I'm more excited to watch him potentially play at in the slot than Marquise Lee.
Yeah, and you're right. That's, you know, a lot of people are talking him up as well during the offseason that he's the guy who's going to bring on that extra dimension instead of Marquise Lee.
Mm-hmm. So we'll get to some viewer questions now regarding the Jaguars. The first one I have is from Lawrence Person, and he asks, what is the worst Jacksonville Jaguars draft class?
Draft class. Oh, wow. I don't know if I could think of a class off the top of my head. Oh, it says pick. That was too hard. Class is too hard. There are so many to choose from. There's a team that really does not know how to draft. It's got to be the Jaguars. I mean, I'd like to see, like, some DVOA stats based upon their draft picks because historically they just don't know what the hell they're doing. I think some of the bigger ones, you know, there's a Matt Jones. He was a first-round pick, and I think he was caught trying to snort the goal line. Justin Jackson, of course.
That joke never gets old.
Oh, no, never. I think you have to go with the big one, though. And a team invests a lot in a certain position, and when a guy just clearly does not have the skill set to be successful at the NFL level and you draft him anyway, then that's a big problem. And that guy's Blaine Gabbert. I just don't know. I realize he's a real American.
He's pretty good now, though.
He's still shit. Don't get me started. But, you know, he's not
the worst quarterback of all time anymore. He's come a long way.
It's just too bad, yeah. But, you know, Gabbert's the guy he's the perfect example of a guy who was inaccurate in college and that translated precisely as being inaccurate in the NFL. That's why I think he's another guy who I think is a great poster child for that if you're not accurate in college, you're not going to be accurate in pros, and it's hard to improve on that. So, yeah, that'd be my pick.
Yeah, I know his issue was that he just couldn't stay in the pocket at all. He just, you know, crapped his pants. But last year, 282 completions on 178 completions on 582 attempts, 63.1% completion percentage, 2,031 yards, 10 touchdowns, 7 receptions, 4 fumbles, and a DVOA of -15.6%, which is 31st. But hey, he's not the worst quarterback of all time anymore. He's come a long way. And so I enjoyed watching Gabbert play last year. It was beautiful.
But
that has to be the worst draft class in the year of all time, mainly because that was the 2011 draft. They took Gabbert, and they took him ahead of J.J. Watt. They took him ahead of, you know, Robert Quinn, Alden Smith, all these really great defensive players, and one of the, you know, best defensive draft classes of all time. Patrick Peterson, they took him ahead of him. And so that has to be the worst Jaguars draft class of all time, just because of the opportunity cost. One, you hitched your, you know, wagon to a quarterback for 3 years who had sub 50% completion percentages in Jacksonville at times. He was just miserable, but also you lost some of these transcend defensive players there too. The other question I have is from Freedom Ride, and he said, if the Jags move to London, how long before we see the tarps in Wembley? And how long after that is the UK have a Brexit vote to leave the NFL? So would you ever see the Jags actually moving to London at all? Do you think they're going to be pretty safe there in Jacksonville, aside from the games here and there? Because it's a small market to help generate more interest.
I got to be honest. I don't see how in the hell Jacksonville still has an NFL team. I mean, that, you know, we talk about poor fan bases in sports, and Jacksonville is I think is pretty much the worst, and I just have no fear saying that. You've got a few fans that actually know what they're talking about, but let's face it, especially watching a primetime glitter kitty game is like watching a giant advertisement for tarps. It's pathetic. The fan base is pathetic. It's always been terrible. It's in fucking Florida, for crikey's sake. I mean, what do you expect? Do you expect an intelligent fan base in Florida? I mean, give me a break. So I don't know how. I don't know how they got a team in the first place and how they're still there.
I guess the '90s, man. But I do like Big Cat Country. They're really funny. Their Twitter account's funny. They have some good writers there too. And you know, doing some research for this show and the preview I'm writing right now, I've learned a lot from them. And the people who like the Jags really like the Jags. And you know, I feel bad for those poor bastards because every year, you know, they've been. God, I mean, they've made the playoffs once since 2007. And I think they've had a winning season. They've been above 500 once since 2007, haven't made the playoffs. Since then, they've just been, you know, miserable. But they keep turning out and caring. And so the last Jaguars question I have is from Uproot Texan. And he said the AFC South were a taco sampler. What kind of taco would the Jaguars be? And that's our last one. So what type of taco would the Jaguars be in a taco sampler?
I didn't see that one, so I'm totally not prepared for what kind of taco would Jacksonville be? Jacksonville taco would be some shit that McDonald's would come up with.
I know mine. There's this really great Mexican restaurant in San Antonio named Los Robertos, and so we'll go there a lot. And they're also open all night, so we'll go there, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning sometimes and whatever. And we were there a few months back, and I was looking at the menu, and they have a fish burrito there. And it's, you know, it's not the cleanest restaurant in the world also. But so they sell a fish burrito, and the ingredients are like tartar sauce, I think mayonnaise, and you know, something else. And it just looks despicable and awful. And so my friend told me, he said, hey, you know, if I buy this fish burrito, would you actually eat it? And so I haven't done it yet. We haven't had the right time and place, but I'm going to attempt this fish burrito challenge. And so I think if the Jaguars were a taco sampler, one, because they're a cat, and two, they're kind of, you know, they're kind of nasty down there, you know, for the last, you know, 7 years, I think they'd definitely be a fish burrito if they were a taco sampler.
Oh, that's really freaking gross. Hey, we're not going to answer, we're not going to answer Joel in Kansas City's question.
But if it's Texans related, we'll get to it after this next one. So that's all the Jags questions we have. And so now we'll kind of give our prediction for the season for them. So according to Football Outsiders, they're projected to finish fourth. And like I said, mean win projection, 6.9 wins. Their postseason odds right now are 26.2%. And they are projected to have the 18th toughest schedule this year. So BFD, what record do you think they will have at the end of the season? And where do you think they're going to finish in the division as well?
I think this is a 7-9 team, which is a strong improvement for them, believe it or not. I think the offensive line is really going to be their undoing. They've improved a lot of defense, where they're going to help keep them in games to some degree. But really, the offensive line, I think, is terrible. And also, we still need to see Gus Bradley do something except derp. And there's, you know, he deserves a certain amount of responsibility for this roster, the talent that's on the roster, the draft picks. He deserves a certain amount of blame for that. So you can't point to him and say, hey, he's going to be a great coach. When, man, if dude can't get talent on his team, then it doesn't matter how good a coach he is. The talent still sucks. So I think 7-9 is fair, which basically is the FO projection. I do think that would be, my guess would be that'll be good enough for third place in the division, in a very tightly fought division, is what I'm kind of seeing.
And a very fun division also, don't forget that.
It's going to be a lot of beating, interdivision violence. It's going to be a lot of teams beating each other up in the division, a lot of 1-1 records against your division mates. Is what I foresee for the 2016 season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I have them at 7-9 also. And I think the reason why is just the defense is probably – the improvements on the defensive side of the ball, I think it's probably worth about 2 wins. I think last year they were about a 6-win team also to begin with. And so you add the extra, you know, win or two with the improvements they made on the defensive side of the ball. And so I think they're going to finish 7-9 or 8-8. I wish the best for Bradley, but I don't think he's a good head coach. And I think that I got hope for Jacksonville. You know, this will be kind of their last year with him, and they can get a guy who can, you know, do more with the talent that they have and kind of give them some next step. But yeah, you know, I think the biggest issue is just going to be one, like, how is the pass rush going to be there? Is the secondary going to be able to improve from the 30th worst pass defense in the league to something better? And also, if Blake Bortles cannot make so many turnovers, you know, if he puts them in the holes and he puts them behind early by making mistakes, I think it's going to be a big problem as well, too, for them. But, you know, they should be fun to watch this year. They're a very versatile defense, and they should be able to do a lot of different things. And they actually have talent, and they're actually like a real NFL team for the first time since, you know, 2008. And so I'll be excited to watch them. But I think they're going to go 7-9, like you said. I think they finished third. And I think there's kind of possibility for 8-8, but I don't think that they're going to be a playoff team at all next year, like some people are possibly projecting.
Yeah, and I think one thing, especially defensively, that team is fast. I mean, they have a track on defense. I mean, if you look at Dante Fowler, has a serious case of the quicks, Ngakoue, I hope I'm getting that right. I got to think about pronouncing names correctly. I hope I'm not butchering that. Miles Jack, Telvin Smith are among the fastest guys in their classes. Telvin Smith might be the fastest linebacker in the NFL today. Jalen Ramsey, Davon House, Gibson. Man, this team could potentially compete in the Olympics. That's scary. So that would be fun by itself.
And if I liked their coach more, I would probably pick him maybe 9 games or so, to win 9 maybe. But I just don't really trust Bradley at all. And I also kind of like all the funny things coming out, like, oh, they have this auto position now, which is the same thing as their strong side linebacker, but they're just coming up with different names to try to create some faux excitement there, and it's all kind of funny too. But we have a little more time now, and so we're going to talk about the Texans, and I'll save this. I'll make another spreadsheet for this year's Bell Red Radio, and we'll make projections, and we'll save it all up, and we'll see who gets the most correct, and maybe you'll get another Cecil Shorts autographed rookie card. Next year also. But so it's about the Texans, and really the only question we have is from Uproot Text, and he said, if the Texans were performing the Olympics, which player would compete in which event? And so I guess if you can name a couple off for the sake of it.
All right, so I think the low-hanging fruit on this one is Shane Leckler for the rifle event, for like maybe for any of the – I can see a Hunter Fisher. I can't remember now. Oh, shit, maybe I butchered that. So there's my low-hanging fruit. But I was thinking, I think you got to have J.J. Watt as a swimmer, maybe diving, because everybody wants to see him without a shirt on, especially MDC. So I think it would be J.J. Watt as a diver, just to give MDC an internal erection.
Yeah. Man, I don't know. I'm trying to think. I think... Man... It really stunk. I think Cecil Shorts would be a great handball player because he's just a natural athlete. He's one of the best athletes on this entire team. So I think that's kind of an easier one. I think DeAndre Hopkins would probably be a great indoor volleyball player, not outdoor volleyball player, where he can just kind of stand from the net and, be really long and do a lot of different things. And then I think J.J. Watt would be a great rugby player, actually. And I think he could play sevens, too. Which I played rugby in high school, and I played lock, and 15s was a lot of fun because I could just hang out by the ball. And then you play sevens, and you just run forever and puke, and it's the worst game of all time. But I think Watt's one of the few big people who could actually play sevens rugby. But that's what I got for that one. And so I guess we can move on to the actual preseason game this week. And I guess we can kind of just start off, for these next couple minutes, is that Clowney and Martin have both missed the last 3 days of practice. And are you nervous about this Clowney news? We talk all the time about he needs to play 13 full games. He needs to play 700 snaps to actually be something more than compliment this defense and be, a real player. Has this already – have you worrying any bit at all?
Probably. This is a big deal. It really is. This is his third year. He has missed a ton of time. He needs to be out there. He needs to be getting reps. Even at his point, he needs to be getting reps. Him being healthy is, especially with Watt's health in question to start the season, we need the dude out there. And in fact, as weak as our defensive line is, even with J.J. Watt, we need him out there. We need somebody else to create havoc that's not J.J. Watt and Whitney Merciless. So you need to have at least 3 people to get to the quarterback. It's a scary thing with him not – practicing, not being out there. He needs reps in the preseason. He needs to be out there. So I do not like.
Yeah, it's kind of the only worst news would be if J.J. Watt says, hey, he can't play this entire – he's going to miss you in the first 4 weeks for sure. And I think it's kind of like the worst thing that you're expecting that you didn't want to hear in training camp. That or Brock Osweiler is throwing 15 interceptions a game, and they're all going to – A.J. Bouye is just picking them off over and over again. Become the two worst things. And I guess the other thing, too, is going back to Watt, is we haven't heard anything about his back at all. you know, he's just kind of practicing here and there and running around in circles, but we still don't have any sort of timetable and if he's going to play week one and how that back's actually going to be too. So those are kind of the two worrying things. And it also goes back to the attrition that I talked about last week on the podcast when we did our camp previews, that they added zero NFL caliber defensive players to this roster last year, and they just assume they're going to be a top 10 defense. But, you know, life doesn't work like that. And so we're already kind of seeing, you know, that, you know, Clowney's injury, Clowney not practicing is kind of like the biggest fear, especially whenever you add that with Watt. You know, who knows when he's going to be healthy too.
Yeah, we're talking about a team that we're hoping Devon Still wins one of the defensive end positions, you know, across from J.J. Watt. That, you know, the two didn't play football last year. I don't know what Helm that badly to win the defensive starting end position if he wasn't even good enough to make a roster last year. He's never made a difference as a football player. Yes, he's clearly had distractions in his life more than, but you don't get better in your fourth year like all of a sudden magically. Just, and if you haven't been getting snaps, it just doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I see Christian Connington play the DN spot too. But yeah, this week they're playing their first preseason game. I believe it's Sunday at 6, or is it Saturday at 6?
I forgot already.
I don't know. I think it's Sunday. I think it's Saturday at 6, is my thing. But yeah, they're playing. You know, speaking of Blaine Gabbert, they're playing the 49ers. Are you gonna watch this preseason game, or are you gonna record it, fast forward later? And you know, what are you gonna be looking for whenever you watch this game? If you do watch this game this weekend.
Well, the answer is yes. I will watch it because I'm insane that way. I can't – even I watch every snap in the preseason. Oh, you suck, Yahoo. Bite me twice. I'll watch the whole thing. And because in the fourth quarter, I'll be yelling at people to not suck.
Yeah. It's Sunday at 6 o'clock Central Time.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if Sunday night, I probably will watch it if I'm not writing anything or reading the Board Trilogy still. But, I mean, I guess I'm kind of looking forward just like how Oswald looks those first two series, Will Fuller's catching the football, if he's actually extending and you're showing some sort of, you know, improvement from what he did in college. And then this kind of, other than that, it's the first preseason game, so the first group doesn't play all that much. And so it's just kind of those kind of fringe guys. And on this roster, I guess you're kind of looking at, you know, Covington, you know, Steven Anderson, that guy who ran like that 4.18 40 and how they perform, and whatever kind of fringe guys. I mean, Covington is more if he can win a starting position, which you're looking for. But, you know, Steven Anderson, the guy who ran that really fast 40, I can't remember his name anymore. Those are
Wendell
the guys.
Wendell
Williams, yeah. So those are the guys that you can be looking for in this first preseason game because the backups play the majority of it. And also, I'm really excited to watch Blaine Gabbert too. Like I said, I think he's pretty good, and it's a lot of fun to watch him be not completely terrible.
I think you're trolling me at this point. I'm pretty sure you're trolling me.
I do like him. Look at my Twitter feed. I always have like a tweet probably once every 3 months. Every time I see some Blaine Gabbert related, he's like, yeah, he's pretty good. He's not awful anymore.
I'm not going to look at your feed.
Yeah, that's fine. That's my big quarterback pick. But, yeah, I mean, I guess that's kind of it. We didn't get a whole lot of Texans questions, and it's just kind of go through the open threads and whatever beat reporter stuff that we kind of get through. And that's kind of what we said also. There's not going to be anything negative, and we haven't seen anything negative yet also. It's all been, you know, sunshine and lollipops and happiness out of Texans camp, aside from this clown thing. And even then, they're really not talking about all that much.
Yeah, it's the training camp. It's all about unicorn shitting rainbows.
Yeah. Oh, and also, Uproot Texan, even though I am a Texans fan, I like football more than I like the Texans, and the Rangers are my favorite team. I would 100% trade in the rest of J.J. Watt's career for a Texas Rangers World Series. And I'm 100% adamant about it. And so, yeah, I mean it. And you can't ban me. We're gonna keep this thing going. I like football a lot more than baseball, but, you know, the Rangers are it. And my favorite thing about being the Rangers is I can just be a complete homer, and it doesn't matter. And because I don't know a whole lot about baseball as far as playing it or anything, so I can just sit there and enjoy as much as I want. And so, Prince Fielder is out for the rest of his career also now. But, yeah, take that.
Damn.
That goes back to that same joke from whenever they were losing to they were beating the Seahawks. They said, I would trade in this win for a Rangers win to help them try win the division that year. And the Seahawks came back down by 17 and won that game. And it's kind of been an ongoing BRB joke for the last 3 years or so.
This is kind of reminding me, I got to say, it's kind of reminding me, I'm trying to think of the dude's name, but the movie Coming to America, and the singer's name is like Chocolate something, Sexual Chocolate, and he can't sing for crap, and after he sings horribly, he drops the mic and just makes feedback sound, and that's what you just did.
Well, all right. Well, we'll end with some good news then. The good news is we have some T-shirt designs that we're looking at, and so we should have some BRB T-shirts to sell that we're not going to make any money off of course, but you can wear them, and you can wear them to the games and at home, and you can give them to everybody for Christmas presents too. And so hopefully we can all actually vote and come up with a design, have those go out for, up on the site sometime soon too. So that's some news aside from being a Rangers homer. But, yeah, be on the lookout for the shirts. And I should have a Jacksonville Jaguars preview typed up sometime this week. And, we have a lot of articles out now because of all these new people too. So the site's really great. And, I think this is the best quality design podcast we've had so far since I've been doing this for, 3 years now also.
Yeah, it's great improvement. So we'll have to start doing this. I'll have to kick the family out of the house so I can cuss and everything.
Yeah, whatever you want to do, whatever, as long as you don't get divorced.
Really, whatever I want to do.
Yeah, as long as you don't get divorced, do whatever you want to do, as long as you don't get divorced.
Yeah. And plus, I don't have to wear pants if I'm inside.
Yeah, that's very important. Well, anyway, thank you for listening to Bell Rib Radio tonight. That's all we got. My name is Matt Weston. Thank you for being on tonight, BFD. And if you enjoy the show, tell all your friends. We got a new season coming up, and I'm sure they want to listen to me talk about the Texas Rangers and the Houston Texans, of course. And if you listen to the show on iTunes, go ahead and rate, review, and tell your friends, and we'll have some more articles and some more content out this week. And thanks for listening tonight. We'll be back next Tuesday at 7 p.m. Central, and we'll be previewing our next team in the series, and spoiler alert, it's the Tennessee Titans, so be on the lookout for that. And again, thank you for being on again tonight, and thanks for staying while listening.
Woo! I thought it was pretty good.